You are listening to the Mashti Community Podcast. Here we share recordings from our panel discussions, which contains open conversations where often overlooked topics are explored from fresh perspectives. We bring together community members, people with lived experience, and sometimes experts to share stories, insights, and way of navigating what life brings. We are not here as experts, just creating a space for voices that might resonate or be useful to someone else. You're always welcome to join us as a guest or part of the audience. You can read more at our website, mashticommunity.no. Hi, I'm Homa, founder of Mashti Community, and welcome to the first episode in our podcast series exploring alternative relationship forms. In this episode, our host Thea speaks with Will and Sarah about their journey from monogamy to polyamory and how it works with them and their partners. Just a quick note before we begin, audience questions have been removed from this episode as we didn't have consent to share their voices. In future episodes, you will hear more dynamic exchanges between the audience included. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you do, please consider subscribing and checking out our other events, which we post pretty frequently on our website and Instagram. You will find the links in the episode description. Thank you.
Should I introduce myself? Yes, a bit
please.
As well? Yes, my name is Thea. I know also some familiar, I see some familiar faces. That's very nice. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm a friend of Homa's. And I'm going to facilitate this little shindig with you. I'm very excited. Maybe a bit nervous. That's okay. Yeah, we actually just talked about that. Maybe we should center ourselves a little bit. So I invite you all to, you know, find a little bit of a comfy spot. I see you're very comfy over there. And take maybe, just close your eyes a bit and take 3 deep breaths together. So a deep breath in and out through the mouth. One more time, in and out. And one last time in. And out. I feel it a lot better.
Yeah, now. That helps.
Yeah, that's good. Like you said, this is a recorded session, so if you don't want to be recorded, whisper it to someone, whisper it to me or Homa. And for what we're going to do today, do you want to say something more about the community?
Sure, just one more thing. Abby, our friend, is here. He's a talented photographer. I asked him to take just a few pictures from this side. So if anyone who doesn't want to be in the picture, it's also okay. We can do it next time. just let us know. So about the community, this is our very first event. We moved here a month ago, and this whole idea of panel discussion came into my mind because of a lot of friends I have in the community that are practicing polyamory, and I could see a lot of challenges, also a lot of course, good outcomes. I realized there's not maybe enough spaces to talk about this form of relationship, and I decided to facilitate with Thea. She has some experience in the field.
Some personal experience, and so my interest to do this with Homa is that I like to do things. I like to do new things. And so I've facilitated a discussion panel once before with people from the parliament. It's a very different crowd tonight than it was back then. But it was also about sexual topics, so maybe it's similar, although. And otherwise, I am a sociologist, and I'm experienced in some ways in, you know, polyamory, alternative relationships, sex. Although, of course, not an expert. That's a hard claim. Yeah, and I just, I like to ask questions, I like to talk. So that's why I wanted to do this.
You yes. are the right person to do it.
Yes. Do you want me to tell a little bit about the idea for tonight?
Yes, if you want to give us a small introduction and yes. when they can ask questions. And mm-hmm. we also have our dear Sarah and Will here yes. that they're going to join us shortly and share their story mm-hmm. and journey on polyamory.
Okay. So for tonight, I had a little PowerPoint that I made, and I'm not gonna, I decided that I'm just gonna use it on my phone, but if somebody wants it, it will be available to you via email. So you can just send us your email via the Instagram, and we can send it to you later. But I decided that I think I will do it a little bit differently. So for tonight's intention is, I think we just wanna learn together, discuss together, be in a room with people who have maybe familiar challenges or ideas or lifestyles. And for the first part, it's just you and me introducing, and we'll get to you later, don't worry. Then I'm gonna do a little question session with you guys based on to see what is the knowledge of this community. Where is our framework? And to maybe establish something like common language for tonight. And then I would like to invite you guys up to the sofa for a little panel discussion. I have some questions. Then we'll open up. We'll do a little break after that. I think that will stretch your legs, refill your cups, use the bathroom. Come back and then open up the floor for some questions, sharings, discussion points, and so on.
Yes.
So first of all, I think it would be really interesting to know if people are familiar with the term polyamory. Raise a hand. Yeah. What about monogamous? What about kitchen table polyamory? Ooh. All right. What about solo polyamory? Okay. What about a triad? All right. Then I won't use that much time on what we have as a field of different terminology, because you have some experience in that and you can Google yourself. But I think for example, the practices is more something that we can talk about. And some of the practices that we're gonna touch upon maybe today and also the panel discussion is, you know, open communication in forms of what that can look like. Stepping into the unknown, as in terms of like, we are living in a society, especially here in Norway, in westernized societies, where the framework is heterosexual, normative monogamy. And like you said, there's not that many spaces that we may have opportunities to discuss or to have role models of polyamory, alternative relationships, and so forth. And then we're going to touch upon maybe some boundary setting and what that can be. Time management. And what does that look like in terms of having a hierarchical polyamory and a non-hierarchical polyamory? How many How many hours in a day, in a week, do you use on your partners, and why? Negotiating agreements and renegotiating agreements. And this, I think we can think of maybe as a emotional and communicative network to, you know, ask stupid questions and, get to know what people are doing behind closed doors. Some conflict resolution and jealousy maybe is also part of this. Would you like to share something about your life and your relationship? Very head on.
I used to be very monogamous until a year and a half ago. I think I am still very traditional when it comes to intimacy, but sexually we started together playing with other people. So I guess it's called monogamish because emotionally we are very exclusive. But it's been a journey. It's been actually a really nice journey. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot more about myself. This was a very scary start. We were dating for about 4 months, I think. After 4 months, we went to our first sex party, and we started playing with other people right here in this apartment. I guess you all know why or how.
It's just the apartment.
Then I was like, we have to move in here. So it was a journey, but I'm grateful for it. I'm happy that I had the courage to break some norms and traditions and experience something new. I feel like we bonded more, we learned more about communication, and how honest we have to be with ourselves first and with each other, otherwise it wouldn't work. Mm. So yes, we are monogamish. What about you?
Me? I'm guessing I will be called something or identified as a solo polyamorist, in terms of that I currently do not have a main partner or partner, but I am, you know, constantly looking for being a unicorn in other people's intimate things. I've done that for about 3 years, and it's not actually something that I decided to do, more like that just evolved, that I had opportunities to be a star guest in other people's very intimate and loving relationships. And I found Subaru like a lot of meaning of it, because I get to, the couples that I've been with have also been extremely gracious and welcoming and opening, so I think that that makes my experience all the well better. So it just kind of happened, and I guess this apartment also was a part of that journey.
Oh, we actually went on one date.
Yes, we did that too, you and me and Mathis, yes.
That's where I learned that something new, that intimacy for me, it's not just having sex with other people. Like, cuddling is the most intimate thing for me, mm-hmm. and I can get jealous.
Yeah, you told me. Yeah.
Yes.
I wasn't cuddling you enough. I was cuddling Mattis much more. Yes.
But we remain friends.
Yeah. So I think solo polyamory is something that I'm practicing, not necessarily by choice, but more like as a habit. I'm also very independent, and I don't necessarily see myself as someone who has a lot of time for other people than myself and the things that I want to do. But but I enjoy a lot of things sexually and a lot of people. Emotionally, I'm independent at the moment and not necessarily looking. So I don't know, maybe I'm not abstaining from being in a relationship, but it's definitely a long time that I've been single. And I really find meaning in the star guests in other people's.
You are.
Yeah. My main role. I enjoy it a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe anyone, someone likes to share something? Anyone likes to share something?
Or has a question?
Not about our dates, but...
I mean...
Okay.
Not yet. We need to warm up a bit more. We need to talk more shit before we can get into your shit. All right. Do you want to make some room for maybe Sarah and Will to come over?
I'm actually going to make maybe you want to.
Should we do like a little bit of a warm welcome for our panelists?
Just in the middle of chatting.
Hello, you guys.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome to the stage.
Thank you.
Isn't it comfy?
So comfy.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure.
You want to start?
Sure. I'm Sarah. I am from the United States. Slightly unfortunate at the moment.
Things have been better.
I have been living in Norway for a little over 4 years, and I absolutely love it here. I am 39 weeks pregnant, going to have a baby soon, and very excited about that. And really excited to be here with my partner, Will. We've been non-monogamous for 5 years, and really benefited from this community, the non-monogamy community in Norway. Although it is small, it is really how we found our people when we moved here 4 years ago, so I'm super grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hi, I'm Will. I am Norwegian-American, so I was born and raised in Bergen, lived there for 19 years, then I ran away to the United States because that seemed interesting and exciting to a 19-year-old, and then in 2020, I was like, oh my god, get me out of here, came back to little boring Norway. And I really enjoy it. I met Sarah when I ran away to the United States. We got married in 2014, so we've been together now for over 10 years.
You're 15 years, babe.
Right, married for over 10 years, but we've been together for 15 years. I know, time flies. Time really does fly. We moved to Norway 4 years ago, like Sarah said, and very happy with our life here and our soon to be new addition to the family.
Yeah. Aww. Well, thank you for that. Where to start? Like, I mean, what you said, you get together not 10 years ago, but some more years ago.
It was 2010, so there was a 10 involved.
Yeah. When did you start to, like, think about changing the dynamics of your relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We met when we were in university, like Will said, 15 years ago, and we had a 9-year... pretty traditional monogamous relationship. We got married during that time. But I think we always kind of saw ourselves a little bit different than our friends that were monogamous, and that we were very independent. Kind of like Taya was describing herself, we were in a relationship, but our relationship really didn't define us. We spent a lot of time individually with friends and family and work, and we were not a wee couple. We weren't like, if you invited me to dinner, it wasn't like, yeah, we'll come to dinner, you know, like we had our own lives and did things quite separately. We obviously spent a lot of time together as well, but I think this kind of laid the groundwork and mentality for a non-monogamous relationship in general, where we were getting our needs met outside of our relationship, even though it wasn't romantically or sexually. We were not expecting the other person to always be filling all of our needs.
And like another point that I want to bring here. So like, I think polyamory, and we can obviously talk more about like how people define it, but like, I personally think polyamory is not only a lifestyle, it's part of your identity. Like, it's a sexual identity kind of in...
It can be.
It can be for some people, right? Like some people identify as gay or lesbian, right? And I think it has to do with like, I think that I had the potential to be this for a very long time. I just thought that monogamy was the way. It was the only way, because that's what you're taught in kindergarten and Bible school and, like, in regular school. And then kind of, like, the door opens and you're like, oh, this isn't the only way. I can do something else. But also, very early on in our relationships, we had a discussion about, you know, like, sexual history, right? Like, oh, like, how many people have you slept with? What have you done and stuff?
And we should say that when we started dating, I was 20 years old. Will was 21 years old. And we had both slept with, like,
maybe, a handful of people.
Maybe, yeah, 5 to 6 people, not a lot of people.
So no sluts ever.
No, but she actually thought I was. Yes. Really funnily.
When we knew each other for about a year before we started dating, and we both liked each other. We had mutual friends. But yes, I definitely thought Will was a slut, and when we made out, we were both blacked out and made out at a party all night. And I thought, like, this is something this guy does every weekend. And
it was not.
Apparently it was not.
But yeah, so the point was we had that discussion, and I had actually pretty recently had a threesome experience. And we were both like, oh, that sounds, like, Sarah was like, yeah, that sounds fun. We should do that at some point. So I think we'd always, like, from very early in our relationship, we had the seed planted in the idea of, like, it is possible to, like, play and involve other people somehow. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't until much later that we really, like, dove down that rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to answer your question about who initiated this or how it started, I think after 8 or 9 years of saying, yeah, someday we'll have a threesome, we were like, well, how do we actually make that happen? And I remember, like, a year before we did anything like that, I have this memory of Will, like, we had a dog, and he went and took the dog for a walk, and he came back and was like, yeah, this girl was hitting on me. She, like, was, you know, playing with her dog, and and I was like, this girl's so cute. Should I, like, ask her to come back to our apartment and just mention that my wife is also going to be there and see if she'd be down? And I was like, no, that's so weird. Who would do that? Who would come home with you? Like, that person must be a weird person. If they said yes and did the thing that we want them to do, they would be weird. So, like,
you don't like the dog pickup story?
I don't know. It just seemed like I couldn't imagine who this third person would be who would have an interest in being with a couple. Like, even though that was something I was interested in, I was like, yeah, how do we go to a bar? Like, how do we even facilitate this? And Will started to do a little bit of research. We were living in Washington, D.C. at the time. And one day he was like, I found this, like, swingers party. Like, should we go to this? And I was very nervous. It sounded interesting, but I think I was just very nervous about how it was going to go. And we had to, like, rent a car. It was a little bit outside the city. But we went there. And we had a really good time, and it was,
What did you do at that first party?
Yeah, it's a good question.
If you remember.
I remember.
So it was like, it was kind of like this warehouse space. It was a little, these people had organized this party at this warehouse. There was, like, a dance floor, and then there was a separate area with curtains that had, like, a bunch of mattresses. And it was actually very nice, like, lots of curtains, soft pillows, and things like that.
It was, like, inviting?
It was inviting. Yeah. It was definitely inviting. And we talked to a lot of people on the dance floor, lots of different age groups, body styles, yeah, lots, a variety of different people.
And would you say, like, there were 50 plus people?
Or? It was like 100.
Really? People. I don't think so.
It was a pretty big space. Like, 100 people is not, there was 40 people in this room. No, 35.
30 people. Yeah. I think it was probably closer to 50 people, but we can agree to disagree. Yeah.
It's quite a large space to still step into, though, for first time experience.
Definitely. And I think people were very welcoming, and it was nice to hear about different people's interests and lifestyles. And eventually we did make our way into the play area. And for the most part, we ended up having sex with each other, but surrounded by other people that were also having sex. And that was just like an amazing experience for me. I'm a nudist. I will say that I identify as a nudist. I like being naked. I like talking about sex. yeah. I like being around other people that are open and willing to do that as well. We did maybe like make out with somebody, another couple, and engage a little bit, but really the fact that we were having sex in a space with other people was plenty for me at that time and felt really liberating.
Yeah.
So when you got home for the party, you were like, oh my God, or what happens after that first like moment until your next encounter with...
Do you remember before, that feeling?
Yeah, it was a good feeling for sure. I remember that. I'm just trying to remember if that was before we started seeing Kaya or
not. Yeah. So this was the very first thing we did, and this was in like the summer of 2019. It was the summer of 2019, and then about 5 months went by until we went to another party, and but in between those two parties, we Googled like couples counselors, non-monogamy, and there happened to be this person that was like a block from our house that specialized in ethical non-monogamy, and
it was not just it happens. It's probably meant
no,
to
it
be
was like, it was insane. It was literally like one block from our house.
We found the block.
And we started seeing this person who really just gave us like a lot of resources and books to read, and we downloaded the Field app, which I think has just been our, at least for me, like the way that we've met the most people and engaged in this community the most for a long time.
Primarily the swingers community, or?
That's kind of how we started out.
Yeah, sure. And I think we quickly realized, especially once we went on to Fields, that the party we went to, I'd call that, at least from my experience and definition, more of a representation of the swingers community, which we do not identify as part of.
No.
It was a good first experience, but it wasn't really what we were ultimately
looking for.
And when we went for me, when I went on Field and saw other young professionals that, I mean, it was nice to see a variety of people, but it was also nice to see people that I thought I identified a little bit more of. It made me feel like, okay, maybe this isn't so weird. Maybe this is something that, like, more people than I think and more people that are similar to me are also engaging in.
Mm.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because we kind of skipped over your question about, like, who instigated the actual conversation. It was our dog, right, in a very real way. And so, like, we'd gone for a long time from the start of our relationship. There was, like, thinking, like she said, like, I want this to happen organically, meet somebody at a bar, but then, like, that person would be weird and stuff. So we had a friend that we were hanging out with a lot around, like, 2017, 2018, and a situation happened. I'm going to make this a very brief story, but like we essentially were about to have a threesome with this person. We're like, this shit is happening. This is crazy.
You felt the vibe.
Oh, more than the vibe. It was like, this was happening.
Okay.
And then
we had also been drinking and it was New Year's
an Eve. Excessive amount of alcohol, to be very clear. But then, so the girl goes to the bathroom to hurry up and get ready. And I look at Sarah and she's like, this is happening. Yeah, this is happening. Anyways, so she and Sarah had been like on our bed, kind of like sexy pillow fighting and stuff. And like our dog Dexter was like, yo, fighting. This is awesome. I'm going to roughhouse. So Sarah started roughhousing with him when our friend left. Yeah. But this is a wonderful tangent. Anyways, he had our dog passed away fairly recently, but he had very sensitive ears. He got chronic ear infections. He was a beagle. Sarah bit him and he bit her back.
And it ruined the night.
It ruined the evening. Because all of a sudden, you're like blood everywhere.
Okay,
thank you. Anyways, so. Because of that, though, just like fall, just kind of being like falling through, we were like, do we really want to do this? That prompted the discussion. Do we want to do this? If we want to do this, we need to look into resources.
Yeah. It was shortly, I think we had been to the party before, but it was shortly after that that we went on a first date with another woman. That we met on Fields, and after that we went on a date with another couple, and I remember the date we went on with this couple, we ended up having sex with them and having a good time, and we came home, and I'm a tired person. I'm pregnant, very tired now. Always a pregnant or a tired person though, and normally after being up until 2 or 3 a.m. coming home, I just want to go to sleep. And I remember we were so connected, Will and I, at that moment, that we like had sex for another couple hours, just the two of us.
Yeah.
And it was so amazing, way more intimate than we had been for a long time. And it just like immediately drew us much closer together, both physically and emotionally. And that was a really good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I can
elaborate.
Well, I was just going to say, like, we've told you up until this point of kind of this initial phase of what happened, and I just see from then, which was 5 years ago, till now, our progression has been, it's been consistent, like, it's been a consistent progression, but definitely a progression. Like, when we were seeing this couple's counselor at the beginning, I remember her asking, you know, what is it that you want? What are your boundaries? And I was pretty open in terms of like what could happen, but I remember very clearly feeling like I have no desire to date another man or be with another man on my own. This is something that like I want us to do together as like a sexual like exploration. I think I was even okay with him doing other things and felt like maybe his sexual needs were a little bit higher than mine, and that was okay. But I was like, my needs are being met here. I cannot imagine dating someone on my own. And slowly we've opened that door again and again. And now I have another partner. I really enjoy connecting with people one-on-one outside of our relationship. And that's my main interest, I would say. And so just trying, I've been trying to reflect on how, I mean, I understand how we got here, how we slowly opened the door, but how my desire changed from being like, that is not something I want, and like really feeling that, not being scared or something, but like really being like, I do not want that. And now being like, I really want that. And I think part of it is just exposure, and you don't know what it feels like to connect with multiple people on a level like that until you have that experience. And I think just having that experience again and again and seeing how much it was giving me is what changed that for me.
That's amazing.
Hmm.
Yeah. Through the stages of like, because you like did this, so I'm thinking this means that it's some stages, a timeline. What is, like, do you remember what is the next phase or stage of this? Going from that, no, I don't want to date people on my own, to what happens next in your timeline? Is it...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can... So we went on this first date with this woman. The first, like, field date we went on was in January 2020. In America, in Washington, D.C., right before COVID happened and the world shut down. So we had basically gone on dates with, like, one woman and then one couple, and we were talking to a lot of other people in fields slowly as we were getting comfortable with this and getting very excited about it. And then all of a sudden we weren't allowed to see anyone, including our friends, or things were quite serious where we were, and we were taking it seriously. And we actually decided to move for 6 months to a kind of remote island in Maine in the US, and we're there pretty isolated for a while. But we were still talking.
Something happens on the island.
What happened on the island?
Yeah, what happened on that island?
Well, I mean, a lot of things did happen. Like, we were chatting with people, and I mean, Will and I had a very active sex life for our relationship leading up to this point, and I thought we had very good sex and explored different things, but I realized once chatting with all these people, and they would say, like, what kind of sex do you like? What do you like to do? What do you not like to do? I was like, I don't know how to, like, verbalize this. Like, this isn't something I had really thought so much about.
Do you feel like you lacked language?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And, well, I just hadn't had practice in it. Like, we are good communicators. I think we talked a bit about, you know, if I was like, oh, I want you to touch me here, I would be comfortable saying that. But really having to say all the things I liked and having to think and having to ask Will, like, what do you do that I like? Or, like, or what do I do to you? Like, you know, and having to talk, we talked so much about sex and about our relationship, and we ended up inviting some of the people we were chatting with to this beautiful location that we were at and had some nice weekends there. But ultimately, after that, we moved to Norway. And when we moved to Oslo,
a new world opens.
Yeah, it kind of did. Like, we knew no one here. Will's from Bergen. He hadn't lived in Norway for 13 years. We really knew no one, and things were obviously not as, not quite as serious here in terms of COVID and lockdown. But it was pretty quiet at that time, and we used Field as a way to meet people, and every time we met with people, it was like, we just want friends. Like, if we connect and have sex or date, like, that's great, but, like, we also just need to meet people, so we're open. Yeah, please meet us. But also during all of this, I'd say the first year of this exploration, maybe 2 years, we realized that we had slightly different preferences as to the types of people that we wanted to be with. And we were only playing with people together, and it started to be a bit tense in terms of, like, showing each other people's profiles and, like, are you interested in this person? What should we say to this person? What are you saying to them about me? What pictures are you sending? And it was just, like, a lot of
upkeep.
Yeah. A lot
stress,
of negotiation.
Organizing.
Negotiation.
Just, it started,
arguments would arise from that. Like, if we went on a couple's date, let's say, even if, like, it was idea, you know, first of all, like, there are a lot of factors that have to go right in a couple's dating scenario, right? Like, he has to like her, and he has to at least, you know, be tolerable of him, right? And, like, right? Like, when you put all those connections, it's like, on a one-on-one date, it's just you two. It's not very complicated.
And we should also have said, maybe in our introductions, that I'm bisexual. Will is
heteroflexible.
Heteroflexible, meaning that he's very comfortable being in sexual situations with men, but isn't really interested or turned on by sex with men.
But yeah, so in, like, a couple's dating scenario, even if we, like, both were really into the other couple, like, sometimes Sarah would be like, oh my God, what is he doing? He's like, she would think that my flirting was, like, cringe, and I'd be like, no, this is the most natural thing. And I'd be the same. I was like, what the frick is she doing? She's, like, just ruining everything. And yeah, like, that just got
tension.
That got hard. Yeah, so then we were just like, well, fuck it. Like, let's try dating on our own.
Well, and also we tried a lot of things. Like, we realized that we acted differently when we were one-on-one with someone, or if it was me and another couple. versus how we would act when we were together. And so sometimes we would say, you know, maybe we'll all play together eventually, but like, I would like to just go on a date with you first, and then you could go on a date with Will, so that there's like some little like more spark that gets cultivated individually, and then we all come together. And yeah, this went on for a little while. Then we ended up deciding to play separately with people, and it was still just sexual and fun. And we had very few boundaries, but our main thing was that we told each other everything. Like, we could read each other's messages, we would come home and the other person could ask as many questions as they wanted, and we would share our experiences.
Total with transparency.
Yeah.
Which was like also like a turn on. Like, we both liked that. Like, mm-hmm. It was really hot to hear about her experiences with other guys, for her to hear about like experiences with other girls. Like that first couple that we hooked up with on Fields, right? Like, you remember, like, I was like, just like, we were both very hesitant about like, I've never actually, like, I'm going to see her fucking some other guy, and yeah. She's going to see me having sex with another woman. And we were just like, how's that going to feel? Like, are we going to be jealous? Like, and mm-hmm. We both, like, really liked that. Like, really, really liked that. So that kind of, like, just paved the way for, we were like, oh, well, like, an open phone policy and just having fluid conversation. That's, like, that seems natural. Mm-hmm. And it worked out really well.
Mm-hmm. But I think we also, like, we knew from the beginning that for us, like, sexual interest did require some connection with someone. Like, yeah. It wasn't just a physical act, but we needed some feeling of connection. And I think once we started seeing people individually, it became more and more clear that we had more fun with people that we were connecting with, and we wanted those connections to be a little stronger. And
prior to your, like, getting together, did you also not, or did you enjoy, like, single hookups, or did you enjoy the connection as well already back then?
Yeah, I definitely needed a connection with someone always.
Yeah, I mean, I had, let's say, like, more one-night stands, but, like, I could tell the difference. It was, like, one thing is really great, one thing is not. And so now, like, I'm 37, I've been around the block a number of times, and, like, a couple of years ago, I found that, like, sex without a connection is, like, it can be the most beautiful person ever, but if I'm just like, yeah, this is a basic bitch, or, like, I'm just not feeling a connection, it's just, like, I have a gorgeous wife, I have an amazing connection with, that I have amazing sex with, I have other partners and friends with benefits, it's just, like, it's not worth my time. Mm. Like, you know, that's, yeah. Time is the most finite resource we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you early on discuss the time management of when you started to date other people? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like, I think, Sarah and I have always had it in us that the idea that, love is infinite, time is finite. That's the limitation.
And that was one of the things that, like, this couples counselor at the very beginning was like, okay, so what are your resources, and what are you willing to share with other people? And what, that was kind of like our talk about boundaries, was like, who do you give certain things to? And we never felt like we couldn't love more than one person. But time, money, there are certain things that do, actually have for us limits. Mm. And then there are some things that feel limitless, like love and more emotional things. And so I think the time part has kind of changed a bit. But for me, it's always been like, it's not just with your other partners. Like, you know, we talked about being quite independent before. Like, how much time do we want to spend together, and how much do we want to spend apart? And that could be with friends, that could be going to the gym or at work. Will spend, you know, values his work, I think, probably in a different way than I do. And there are a lot of other things that you can be spending your time and energy on. And as long as we're in agreement as to the time that we're spending together, what we do with our other time could be with one person, it could be with 10 people, it could be with just family, like, I think we're pretty open.
Because and so it's, you know, time is a zero-sum game, and you create a budget and you divvy it up, so it's not just, oh, would I rather spend time with Sarah or my other partners? I was like, well, I'm going to spend this much time with Sarah, that's, like, for sure, right? Mm-hmm. Would I rather play video games, or would I rather have a threesome? Right? I mean, it can be, like, as you know...
People have strange hobbies.
You gotta pick what is more valuable to you. Like, what gives you more pleasure, and what you want to spend your time doing.
Mm. And, I mean, I think that some people can feel jealousy in this way. Like, if, you know, if Will wants to spend his time playing video games, but I want to spend my time with another partner, and I decide I want to spend all of my other time with another partner, even if that's okay and works out for us and is what we've agreed upon, I can see how, you know, again and again, me saying, like, hey, bye, I'm going to see this other person, and, you know, that definitely brings up some feelings, and it might not feel good, but for us, like, a lot of this has been sitting with challenging feelings and understanding that it's not the easiest path, but it, I think it brings us to a greater truth of who we are individually, and that's what's most important to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good segue to something else I wanted to talk about, right? And it was just, and it's...
What do you want to talk about?
Well, jealousy, right? Yeah. And this difficulty of, like, let's say you walking out the door all the time. So I think for, like, almost, like, before poly, just, like, starting off with non-monogamy, it was the realization, like, I cannot control her feelings for other people. Like, I can't. You have to be willing, like, in order to even, like, walk down this road, for me at least, I had to be able to accept the risk or the odds that maybe, like, if we hooked up with another couple, she would develop feelings for the other man or the other woman, right? Or the other individual, whatever they identify as. So, but because we'd been together for so long, right? At that point, 9 years, I just wasn't worried about it. Our relationship was very strong, so I was like, no, I had this feeling that, like, no matter what happens, if she meets, like, the other, like, perfect person, like, I was the other perfect person at one point, and I've been doing this for 9 years. I have a 9-year head start in this race. So it really enabled me to be like, as long as I focus on my track, you know, and what I can control, I don't have to worry about what I can't control.
Mm. Was it liberating to think that way?
Yeah, mm. It was very liberating to think that way.
Was it equally as liberating or harder mm-hmm. for you?
Mm, no, I think I felt pretty similarly. I think I felt like our relationship was very steady, and especially all these, like, initial feelings in the first few years of feeling like we were getting closer through this process. I did not feel jealous or concerned about our relationship, or especially about the non-monogamy affecting our relationship. We've always had challenges, and those didn't go away, but I don't think that being non-monogamous really added to that for a long time.
Yeah, and really, like, you know, so when we did become poly, like, there was kind of naturally a diversion in paths. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, Sarah started seeing people and identifying things that she liked that she didn't necessarily know. Like, this happens to everybody in life, right? You're like, oh, I really like reading this genre of books or this music. So one thing for me, like, I went down the path of kinky. And very odd circumstances led me down that path. But, like, so kinky sex and BDSM is something that I like. Sarah's not all that interested in it. I discovered that I am primal, which is a variation of being dominant. So it's essentially you think you're a wolf or an animal, right? It's like you want to be, like, the dominant, like, animalistic kind of the alpha pack leader, but not the 50 shades of gray, like, you do this or that, mm. right? Like,
more organic?
Yeah, more organic.
True to yourself?
Yeah.
The nature of the human?
Yeah. And Sarah, not that interested in it. So the beauty of being poly is that I can then do that with other partners. But that created, like, some distance between us. And that has become more and more challenging to navigate. It's like there's nothing wrong with, you know, growing in your own separate ways, but you also kind of want to grow together. Mm-hmm. If you do want to be able to maintain the strength of your relationship, the sense of camaraderie and affection.
Well, and I think what's been interesting is that over the last 15 years, we've grown a lot as people as well. And I think a little bit in different ways, I think that we've gained a lot from each other and learned a lot from each other and probably become a little more similar in some ways, but in other ways we've probably also become more different and maybe see different values and qualities of other people. And I think that part could have happened whether or not we were non-monogamous. Yeah. The sexual part, probably not. Like, if we hadn't had those experiences with other people, we would have known that we liked those things. Now it's figuring out how to still value the things that we've always valued in each other, or new things in each other. Even when we're spending time with other people who maybe possess some of these characteristics that we really cherish in this current moment, in this current state of who we are.
Yeah.
Change of preferences along the way, as well as change of the dynamics.
Yeah, but it can be, at least for me, a strength and a weakness, right? Because it means that, like, well, I've discovered that I have these desires, and instead of being resentful at her for not being able to fill my needs, I can get them fulfilled, right? So I can approach our relationship with a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction and not have resentment.
For her not giving it to you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that happens to monogamous people all the time, right? Then they cheat or to have a family on the side or, you know.
Or they just move on.
You know, it can be an asset, but it can also be a weakness.
As in terms of the distance that it may create?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take a short break here because it's been like a long session with just us three talking. So let's take a 3-minute break, get some water, go to the bathroom. I think I want to touch upon the challenges. You have definitely like had some sort of evolution through this. Different phases. You mentioned that you explored or found new sexual preferences, both for yourself and how that maybe didn't necessarily match up with the other person that you're already with. So what kind of challenges did you face from, for example, the start? What were the challenges? No challenges.
No challenges. Never challenges.
Never challenges.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think Will and I are both quite opinionated, vocal people, and so there's always been challenges in our relationship that it's hard to separate, like, what was a challenge in the non-monogamy aspects. Yeah, and, I mean, we are very communicative, but we also sometimes are over-communicative, and the way that we express ourselves or the way that we talk to each other is can be harmful, and so these are things that we've been working on for a very long time, and I think that the non-monogamy does require potentially more communication. And
in what way? Like you mentioned transparency before, but that just came sort of like as a natural aspect for you guys. But what about, for example, boundaries?
Constantly talking about how things make us feel, and again, you can do that in a monogamous relationship, but I think when there's things that are constantly challenging social norms and your preconceptions of what things are supposed to feel like
and look like
we would maybe talk about an experience we had. Our boundary and our rule that we've always had for each other is that we have to communicate what we're doing with other people. And then it's also the other person's responsibility to communicate how that makes them feel. So they, if it doesn't sit well with them and they don't tell the other person that, that's also like breaking the boundary. Mm-hmm. And so to constantly be like, I mean, Will would often say to me, okay, that was hard to hear, or I don't feel great about that, but I think it's just because of like this social norm that I have, and I want to sit with it for a little bit and digest it. And I think that I, even though it's challenging and doesn't feel great at this moment, I still think I want to be okay with it and move forward. So sitting with those hard feelings again and again, and
both together and by yourselves.
Yeah, and knowing, you know, and for the other person to hear that and be like, okay, I know I did something that is making this other person hurt, but again, like, is it, it doesn't seem like they want me to have changed that, and trying to figure out how that makes us feel and how we want to proceed, and what ends up being worth it, quote unquote, and a lot of these things that were hard at the beginning are no longer hard, and I do think that in order to grow, you need to be challenged and be uncomfortable.
Practice makes master?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of, like, I'm sure there are, you know, there are many challenges, but to be very specific.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of things that... That is very personal.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think of what...
Yeah, I mean, so I can, like, one thing that was very challenging for me and up until, like, extremely recently, really, and it's still, like, it's the poly world and the non-monogamous world is very different for men and women. And in general, in terms of, like, the experience in the marketplace, I can go on to an app and it'll... Like, in a week, like, 5 people will like me. That'll happen to her in 5 minutes.
Right? It could. Okay, we're only sharing our personal experiences. We're not generalizing.
Sure, we're not generalizing. but no, that like, all along has been very challenging for me, because especially when we, like, had just moved to Oslo, we're making new friends, and like, it was... it's ironic, it was kind of easier for me to make, like, friends and make connections, but it was easier for you to find, like, dates and, like, hookups. And
which isn't necessarily what I wanted, but that was the reality of it.
That was the reality of it.
Did
so,
that spark, like, jealousy?
Or not jealousy, but envy.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't like, I don't want you to have that and go out and see those guys. I was like, I want that for me. Mm, like, in,
as well.
Yeah, right? So that was pretty, like, hard to swallow. It'd, like, be like, you know what, like, I'm happy to be able to say, like, I'm happy for you, right? Like, I want you to have this, even though I'm not experiencing the same thing to the same degree. But yeah, I have 2 other partners now, and, like, that's the first time ever I've had, like, another partner other than her. You know,
for a prolonged time.
I'm not talking about, like, people like I date or friends with benefits. Like, these are 2, like, partners that I've said, like, I love you too.
But Will is a very persistent person and he does not give up.
I don't like quitting, which is a strength and a weakness. And like, that actually is has turned out to be the biggest challenge. I experienced burnout at work about 1 year ago. I sort of half recovered. I didn't really. And then I hit the wall again really hard 2 months ago. And, you know, this is at a time when Sarah's pregnant and needs a lot of, like, needs support from me. But I haven't been able to support myself. Mm. And so, like... Yeah, like, it's been really challenging, because then, if going back to what I said, like, you know, one of the keys to the success of our experience from my perspective was the strength of our relationship. All of a sudden that just got, like, bam, smashed with a sledgehammer. And for the first time ever, I started feeling actual like jealousy and discomfort towards one of her other partners. Because all of a sudden I felt like I couldn't control my own relationship. Mm. I was like unable to think the thoughts that I wanted to.
Well, and our relationship was not as secure as it had been in the past.
And, So I have been able to work on that a lot, in the last couple of months, but that was really hard to do.
And I'll say it, like, we don't know what this will be like, but, one thing that we've talked about in terms of challenges and also goes with like social norms and stuff is, what it will be like to have a child and be polyamorous. It's something we've always kind of felt like we were sure we wanted to continue after having a child. Even before I was pregnant, this is something we had talked about. And I think, you know, time, resources, these will obviously be factors. But for me, the idea of like bringing my child to the playground that's outside my house, maybe every day for a while, and meeting other parents and having casual conversations with them, and them seeing me sometimes with Will and sometimes with another person, and me still getting to be the way I want to be with those partners and not be judged or be comfortable with being judged,
because I'm going to be judged. You are going to be judged.
That is something that I'm definitely like willing to try and plan to do, but I don't think it's going to be easy.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be really hard. I mean, I work for Volkswagen, and I came out to my employer, Volkswagen, as a poly person, 2 years ago, but that's like a division of my organization that like needed to know. And I only recently came out to like my direct supervisor,
about being poly
and kinky. I don't tell like my colleagues, cause it's my private business, right? Like, you know, most people in this room probably don't go talk about their sexual habits like with colleagues just for shits and giggles. Some things are private and, you know, but, if I was, for instance, I mean, this is on the record. If I was ever confronted with this, I was like, yeah, this is who I am. And like, that's tough noogies. You're going to deal with it.
Are you afraid of being judged?
No, I'm not.
But this is, okay, Will is a very unique person. This is something that I have always loved about him, but Will does not, he truly does not care about being judged, and I've never seen him be embarrassed before in his life, so maybe that has made this whole thing a lot easier for you. But I mean, so I am definitely a little bit more self-conscious. I don't want to be judged to some extent, but for me, I also don't want my child to be
that.
To be treated differently because of who we are or the way that we choose to live our lives, and that is my biggest concern when it comes to this moving forward.
But we also had the conversation like a couple weeks ago about like, well, like discrimination is a thing in society, right? Whether it's, you know, like, homosexuality was illegal in Norway until, like, 1977. You know,
or if we had been an interracial couple, you know, also a long time ago. Like,
if you were black in the United States today, you're going to be discriminated against, right? So there's also an aspect of it, like, we want to be role models for our kids and teach them right or wrong and to be proud of who they are or who, you know, like, whatever they like. So it is also important to me personally to be like, this is who I am, and I don't want my kid to see me trying to hide who I am or being ashamed of it. So that's part of it.
Super brave, though. I don't think a lot of people can do that. Just put that on. It's a compliment, by the way.
I didn't always used to be this way. But like, I have been both fortunate and unfortunate. Like, I've had some close encounters with death, and that puts things in some pretty unique perspective when it comes to what matters and what doesn't. And what other people care about me, like strangers, is pretty low on the rank
yeah.
of things. Like, I care what I think about me. I care what she thinks about me and what my friends do. But as long as I can be like, if I can like be on my deathbed and say like, I've had a good life.
No regrets.
That's it.
Yes. I think that was it for my questions, but I can open up the floor for some other people to speak. Yes. What other resources are there? What helped you in your discovery, except from your therapist sessions?
Well, I was going to say, like, some of the resources that this person gave us were books, but we specifically practice nonviolent communication. That was something that they thought was very important. And
can you explain that concept a bit?
Can I?
not it doesn't need to be about you guys, but like, what does that look like?
Yeah, we recently like started talking about this again, and I think we read a book, but I can't remember what the book was. But she had
nonviolent communication.
But an example of nonviolent communication would be is like, instead of saying you're attacking me, you say I am feeling attacked right now. Mm. Right? You're taking you're doing something like an aggressive like kind of, and you're reflecting back on you.
Mm. How it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And how yeah. What your reaction
is. Not you're hurting me, I am feeling hurt right now.
And I think in practicing non-monogamy, that's really important because, you know, we're constantly doing things and reflecting on them, and it's not like, well, when you have sex with someone else, it does, like, you hurt me. It's when you have sex with someone else, it makes me feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more to it than that. This is something that we practiced for a while at the beginning and probably should return to. But it's not something that we've like recently been reading about.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say so. Okay. Like, couples therapist is a great resource if you can find one that specializes in that here in Oslo. But like books, right? You mentioned that books, audiobooks, podcasts, articles, man, there was I use Fields, and an account popped up a couple months ago. It's Norge Bak Fasaden, like that TV show, like on program on TV2. They created an account and they were like, hey, like match with us if you are interested in talking to us and being interviewed, right? Also dating apps, like meeting people, talking to people.
I was going to say that. I mean, I think being in community spaces like this and talking to other people about their experiences, like, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm going to have the same experience from you or that I need the same thing as you. But for me, hearing about other people's experiences is so valuable and
gives you perspectives,
so
ideas.
So much perspective, yeah.
This fits with me as well. This I don't necessarily...
And you're engaging with multiple partners, so you know, if you can hear from someone something that might be helpful for you and one partner but not for you and another partner, and I know that I am very different in each of my relationships, and that's something that I really like, but it also means that you have to learn to be a partner for multiple different types of people.
Could you name a few of the books or the podcasts?
Yeah, so my favorite book is called More Than Two. And then I also really like The Ethical Slut.
Yes.
The Ethical Slut is like, the first edition came out in like the 70s and is considered like the Bible of polyamory. Another interesting one was called Sex Before Dawn. And that it's more focused on like the evolution of humans, and that we like came from like non-monogamy was the norm, and then monogamy came about really as like a method of like social protectionism, right? Like when we started growing things, well, then you needed like workers for your farm, kids, right? Like, so you'd have like
convenient.
Marriages with like feuding tribes or kingdoms, right, became like a thing. way to form alliances. But like, and then all that has disappeared, right? So they're like, so now why do we have this? So it's an interesting book. I'm not a huge fan of like their writing style, but it raises a lot of interesting questions.
Yeah. And I just recently read Polysecure, which has been, I think, really helpful for me at this stage of being polyamorous. I think the other books we'll mention were more informative at the beginning when I was exploring and just like had no idea what the options were that were out there. But yeah.
Are you a hierarchical or a non-hierarchical couple?
Yes, we didn't talk about that before. So we are hierarchical. So she is my primary partner and my other partners are just our partners. And, you know, so like everyone define, so the word polyamory means different things to different people, right? That's just how we, that's the cat. It can be, labels can be incredibly useful, but yeah. Also destructive, right? Mm-hmm. Because you use it as a way of trying to communicate a mutual understanding, but that is also based on the other person understanding it the way thing. That you do, which isn't true. So the way that we think of ourselves as poly.
And maybe we could say this for ourselves.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You think of yourself as poly.
Right. The way that I think of myself as poly is she is my primary partner. I have other partners, but it sounds exhausting to like share a home or kids or finances with multiple other people. So conceptually, I would be okay with that. That's like the non-hierarchical model of polyamory.
So I think, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but for me, and it sounds like also for you, you are my primary partner because we share finances, a home, and a family. But emotionally, we are open to being more non-hierarchical.
Yeah. But for me then, because we are that, like, I need to dedicate more. It's almost like I have more vested in her. Like, she's going to be the mother of my child, right? And we do live together. So, like, if, like, an emergency happens, like, I'm prepared to tell my other dates, like, hey, sorry, I have to drop everything now because, like, this fire needs to be put out. But there have been also situations, more so for you, I think, where, like, something has come up with your other partner and you have been like, I have to go deal with this now. And I'm like, let's go do that. Mm-hmm.
But I think I've tried to explain this to other people where, I mean, it could be like, Will could be my brother and we happen to like,
that'd be weird.
Have like inherited a home together and share, you know, our money and maybe we're like raising our other sibling. Like, you know, like these, like, we're choosing to do those things because we love each other and we have a very shared interest in the type of lifestyle we want and the type of home we want and family. But I try to separate that then from, like, the romantic parts of our relationship, and then the romantic part of our relationship is this other thing that deserves its own time. And so it might look like I've spent more time with Will because I have to do things at the house with him and we're going to spend time with our child together. But then I also want to have my romantic relationship with him, which might be more equal to my romantic relationship with another partner.
That's a really good point because, yeah, so I think this discussion is coming about because your other partner at some point mentioned something about like, oh, well, Will gets to spend all this time with you and I'm somewhat envious of that, right? But it's like, I would argue that, like, I get, like, all the, like,
The boring stuff.
And, like, he gets far more, like, romantic and quality time than we do because, like I said, like, we've had, like, some serious issues, like, the last year and a half and, like, I can count on, like, one hand how many times we've had sex in, like, the last 6 months, right? So there, that I like that way of kind of like trying to like separate those time styles.
When we have like it, when we have a new partner, a new person comes in, how do we like reevaluate or redefine maybe what how we use our resources.
Yes.
So, great question. So there is a concept that is commonly like referred to as like polysaturated, which is like when your time, like you don't have more time, you're saturated, right? So when I took on like two other partners, all of a sudden I was like, I don't have time to like, there are X amount of text messages you can write in a day, right? Like,
Will has a lot of energy.
But like, you know, it became quite clear that it's like, this is enough. I don't need anything more. And like, that has happened to Sarah before, and I could never really relate to that concept. And I was like, oh, that's what she's talking about. But yeah, so it's like then for me at least, it's like, well, now I'm like much less active on Field and like other dating apps. I like withdrew from that because like this is what I want to focus on for right now.
But I think it also has to do with like having your needs met, and it's hard to, at least for me, it's hard if my partner says that they really want something, they really want to spend time with this other person, and it's making them really happy and feel really supported, and for me to say, okay, well, that doesn't make me feel good, I don't want you to have that. And that's something that we've had to come back to again and again, and what all this communication has kind of been about. I can say, you know, okay, I understand you want to spend this time with this person. This is what I need and what I, how my needs might be fulfilled by you. But ultimately, like, it is like a constant reevaluation of like, what do I need? I've been pregnant for the last year. I have little interest in meeting new people right now, or have for the last year, really. And my needs are just different than they have been in the past. And so I think that communication is key. But it's hard. It's hard to say, like, is it really that, like, I want to spend more time with you? Or is it I'm insecure about how much time you're spending with this other person? Because it could be, you know, I'm insecure. Maybe I should, you know, find a new hobby or do that thing I've always wanted to do. And it's not actually that I need more time with you. It's that I need to be fulfilled.
My time.
She's asking about metamors how we
kitchen table polyamory also,
navigate that. Yeah, so yeah, Taya had mentioned earlier kitchen table polyamory, and I think at least for me that is like the ideal. Like, I would love that, and I'd love to have all of our partners comfortable coming over to our house and being engaged with each other in different ways. And that there have been several situations where I've dated people that Will has been close friends with, and that's been, I mean, I think we've talked about this recently. It's been extremely good experiences for us.
Positive.
Very, very positive experiences. And I think what makes it that way is that when I'm dating someone that Will knows well and is friends with, he knows them as a person, knows their intentions and trusts them. It just takes the mystery out of it. And honestly, that's so the reason that we've always had this transparent rule of transparency is because for me, I get jealous when there's mystery. Like, if there's something that I don't know, if I knew he was going out on a date with someone and he comes back and he tells me nothing, I'm just gonna be like, what happened? Who was this person? Like, what is happening? But if he just tells me, it's not a problem at all. And
how has it made you feel, though, like when you met, or how do you introduce your other partners to your, what you said before, like your primary partner?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that it can be hard for different people. Like, it's not an expectation that I have for all of my, well, Actually, that's not true. It probably is an expectation that I have that they would at least meet Will. That's actually something that I make pretty clear at the beginning, that it's easiest if at the beginning of a relationship they meet. I don't have the expectation that they're going to be friends or that they're going to be close, like some of our past experiences have been. I was going to say something, I can't remember. But, I think it, for me, when I've met Will's other partners, it has always been that same feeling of, like, when I first saw him having sex with someone else, where I'm like, that's my person, and this other person sees how great they are. I know how great they are. I know that he is good in bed, and now this other person is getting to experience that, and this other person is getting to experience having a relationship with him. And it just makes me happy that somebody else gets to see that and enjoy that as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I will say it's like, so...
Do you have something to say?
I do. Actually, surprise. It can also be challenging. And like, it wasn't until recently that like I experienced my first challenge with this. But like, Sarah's current partner, she started dating over the summer. And when I was already having like mental health issues and our relationship was kind of going downhill, and it's been very hard for me to hang out and meet this other person. And, I was like, it's not that I like this person or dislike this person.
You just don't have capacity.
It's more that this person reminds me of everything that's wrong, that I'm not able to do, that I'm not able to provide for her right now.
Because of our specific situation where Will feels like he's not able to support me because he's trying to support himself. And it, again, it doesn't have to do with this person. It has to do with like the relationship and our current situation. Yeah.
So it can also be super hard.
Question was, if we've been doing this for 5 years, if we could go back to our self 4 or 5 years ago, what lessons do we have for them?
Yeah, and so my answer is related to what Sarah was talking about, like boundaries that we kind of set at the beginning. One of mine was like, I have no interest in like a male-female threesome.
And I didn't either, actually.
And she didn't either. Like, I was like, no, that's it. And I was like, I'm heterosexual. And it wasn't that I was scared of it or I didn't think so. I was just like, that doesn't sound appealing to me right now. And now it does. So yes, that would be my advice to myself. Anything else? that's the first thing that came out.
It's a great one.
I mean, I think just like, and I'm hesitant because I feel like we were open along this whole way of things changing. And, I mean, I'm very surprised. Like, yeah. If I were to go to myself 5 years ago and talk to them and I'd tell them where I am now, I think it'd be very surprising. But, I don't think that I was closed off or did anything to prevent myself from making it harder to get where I am.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So do you feel like you had like to have this maturity period of like reaching,
yes,
stretching, like, you know, failing and error and like evolving more organically than like necessarily you have to go back and you go straight to that because that was what I now think is the best thing in a sense.
Yeah. So kind of an extension of this conversation is like, if we could go back in time, would we do anything differently? And I think the answer is no. Mm-hmm. I think like we opened up for non-monogamy at a really, really good time because our relationship had developed and become strong enough that we had the tools that we needed to be really, really successful. Maybe we could have done it earlier, but I think then there would have been more risks involved in terms of like the stability of our relationship or other things. And I think it was like, every step of the way, all the phases that you talked about, it was more like, you know, we did what we were comfortable with and we opened doors. Mm-hmm. And behind each door was a new door. And we very rarely encountered something that we weren't willing to try and keep opening doors. And I feel like it just went at the perfect pace.
And I totally agree. And what I find most impressive is people that start their relationship with a non-monogamous relationship. I'm not saying not to do it at all. Like, I think it's totally possible. And I am grateful to have examples of that in my friends. But I don't know how, if I could have done that.
Yeah. I mean, like what Homa said, right? Like, you went to a sex party after 4 months. Like, oh my God. Like, that's good job. Don't know if we would have had the tools to have been able to do that.
Yeah, but it's something that I enjoy hearing about from other people. Yeah. And I think it's really possible and fascinating when that's successful.
Yeah.
Mm. You also had a question. I think then maybe one more question after that, and then we can round up.
Okay, the question was how do we protect the privacy of a third person when Will and I have already agreed to share everything about our other relationships with each other. So it's also something at the beginning of a relationship that I let somebody know, and
beginning of the relationship?
Or with the other person.
Even going on a date with someone. I go on a date with someone, I say, maybe if I go on like 2 to 3 dates with someone and mm-hmm. I'm interested in seeing them in the future, I would say, just so you know, it would be really important to me for you to meet my partner pretty soon, just so that like they can see your face and know who you are, and know that they are aware of what we do together and can read our messages. I think in our experience, the longer we date somebody else, the more boring it becomes to the other person. Like, we just naturally stop reading each other's messages and stop asking, like, what did you do on your date today? Because it's your, 30th date and I don't actually care anymore. And that's just always been what kind of happens at that point. So I haven't encountered a situation where somebody, the third person, has asked, Can this remain between you and I? I think I would be pretty comfortable with that. Like, after a certain period of time, unless there's something about that relationship that feels not okay, and in which I think we'd be talking about that already.
Yeah. But yeah, so I obviously work for Volkswagen, and like information security is something that I think a lot about. So when I do talk to partners, I'm like, this is our policy, have you? And really, like, I tell them, it's the same for our friends too. Like, she has open access to my phone, so she can read my conversations with anyone, right? And my friends, my family, whatever. This is something that I just in general tell people. And if you want to have a confidential conversation with me, it should be audio. Because then at least I have a power of discretion over what I can choose to disclose or not,
But it is a good question. And I mean, I think for me, if I had gone on, say, like 5 dates with someone, I was feeling pretty good about them, but not in any sort of like committed way, and they were like, I'm not really comfortable with you telling your partner about what we do together, I think that would be a discussion between, a continued discussion with that person and with Will and I, and trying to figure out why that is, what are they not comfortable with, and what are we not comfortable with. I mean, we're just pretty open people in general. We're here sharing our story with you, and not that I am allowed to share my story about every person I've been with a public audience like this, but I think if you're going to date me and know me and be close with me, you're going to understand that it's valuable to me to be able to share my experiences with other people.
I think that we have reached maybe the time limit of today.
Do we have any more questions, or can we? Yeah.
Even if you have them, I mean, you're welcome to send them via the Instagram or email, and we can get back to you. You will get back to them. I also have the podcast that I've had recently researched on the PowerPoint that I made for today. So I'm happy to share that with you if you want some inspiration and something to do, to listen to, I mean. And then maybe a big thank you to you guys and you and everybody in the room.